This is an ESO and Dude Letter production. Welcome to Mission Briefing.
Hey everyone, you know, this Bond side project was our first major myopia side project, and I wanted to announce that coming in July, with the new season, we're going to have several more surprises coming your way, so keep an eye out for that. The best way to find out about them is to join our Facebook group, to go to our myopia podcasting website, which you can get through dudeletter.com and myopiapodcast.com. Of course, I don't know how you get the podcast. You can get it through iTunes. You can get it through Stitcher. You can get it through Google. And, of course, some of you get it through the website. But if you haven't been to the website, go to myopiapodcast.com, and you can find Mission Briefing right there. It's a great-looking website designed by Scott Miller. Also, join the Facebook group. And I'm saying this because we have some exciting new things coming down the pipeline, and I want to make sure you know about it. Because unfortunately, we're winding towards the end of our Mission Briefing episodes. This one is one of those days where you wish you didn't have to come to work, but we did watch, in fact, the Pierce Brosnan final movie, Die Another Day. And, well, I think you can hear it took a lot of courage to get through some of this. So enjoy the end of Pierce Brosnan's Bond career. Also, turns out that Sun TV show is pretty boring, so I can't say he's done much better stuff recently, but in between he did some good things. I mean, Thomas Crown was pretty good. So regardless, here comes Die Another Day starring Pierce Brosnan and Halle Berry. Enjoy.
I'm gonna wake up, yes and no, I'm gonna kiss some part of...
Haven't been listening to the Revcast? Here's what you're missing.
These sharks have an economy based on gold?
Apparently.
You have a shark like decked out like Mr. T with the bling all over
it. Oh, now I want to see that. I want somebody to draw a picture of a shark with a mohawk. I pity them.
I'm done. The Revcast by RevolutionSF.com. Available at RevolutionSF.com, iTunes, and part of the ESO Network.
Welcome to Mission Briefing. This week we killed off Pierce Brosnan's entire career.
And about 1,000 brain cells for each of us.
This is embarrassingly, I guess, the second time we've watched Die Another Day in... God, 18 months, and I'm sadder each time I do it. The charm is varnished right off. So we should go around the table because I keep forgetting to do that part on Bond movies. But I am Nick Hoffman, the one and only, my Opia host, Dude Letter producer, and by the time this comes out, executive producer of Doomed to Repeat, presented by Tropics of Meta and Georgia State University. And on panel...
Doesn't that sound fancy? Wow. That's impressive sounding.
I'm also a lecturer and a producer for a bunch of other stuff, which will come out soon.
So. Do you sleep at night, sir?
With a daughter at age 7 months, no, I do not. But sometimes when you wake up looking this good in the morning, you wish you could.
You lucky bastard.
Yeah, right? On panel this week, we have...
Jeremy.
Hello. Hello, this is Daniel, and I spent 14 months in the North Korean gulag.
And working on a podcast spinoff of his own.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Matt, I don't do anything. I just am here.
Well, he's our Bond expert. He's
Oh, that's true, yeah. I'm so not sorry. Doing much for this one, but...
And...
I'm Thomas Herman, the Brothers Herman, and host of the Geekly Oddcast, and... Dear God, why did you invite me to this one?
Well, you have 9 other spinoff podcasts to talk about, too, but I'm not going to make you remember those.
Yes, Outer Worlds and the game show we've started.
They do realize that by this point, you better come up with another episode, because this is going to sound really dated if you haven't.
Yes, there will be another episode before this one comes out. When is this coming out again, just so I have an idea?
April.
Good, okay. There will be at least three more episodes before that.
You know, I just want to say, Thomas, if you could have reenacted this entire movie with puppets, it would have been so much better.
The Halle Berry puppet.
I might be able to do that by April if I can just stick with the three I've got.
All right.
All right. So as is tradition, before we get to that Madonna song, which we're going to try to avoid as long as possible, we should talk about the cold open, which is, well, we've recently watched Tomorrow Never Dies. This movie is the same as Tomorrow Never Dies. It opens on people selling weapons. This time they just happen to be in North Korea.
I thought that was selling diamonds, and then a very useful suitcase that can also fit C4 under said diamonds.
Yeah.
But they're selling...
Yeah, they're selling the hover chip.
Hover things. Just random and weapons. The guns that fire like tanks, which is a thing that shouldn't exist.
Oh, the tank busters or whatever.
Yeah, they're like machine gun... Well, they're rocket launcher gun things that don't have any kickback and are magic.
No, it's like big recoilless rifles without any kickback or drawbacks.
So James Bond.
Here we go again, analyzing a Bond film for factuality.
Well, and I like how you faded out because you realized what you were saying was bullshit.
Yeah.
So let's give this a shot, see what happens. James Bond surfs into North Korea.
And that's not a euphemism. He actually surfs.
Literally. And in case you thought you're listening to Myopia, we're talking about surf ninjas, you're wrong. This is a 75-year-old Pierce Brosnan.
I wish we were talking about surf ninjas. I really do.
Rob Schneider at his finest.
Don't make me come down there and beat you with the leg of my...
Wait. Rob Schneider was in Surf Ninjas?
Yes. Don't make me come down there and beat you with a leg of mine that no longer works, because I'll do it!
I had completely forgotten that.
So
why aren't we watching Surf Ninjas right now?
So Bond surfs in North Korea, manages to make a diamond arms dealer land his helicopter before he's supposed to. Hijacks the helicopter, steals his suitcase, manages to stick C4 in it, and fly off to meet some North Korean general's son.
What is his name? Zhao?
No, Zhao is his henchman.
Moon.
Yeah, Colonel Moon.
Yeah.
Colonel Moon to try and sell him diamonds in exchange for military weapons.
I hate to interject, but wasn't Colonel Moon one of the knockoff Bond novels that Ian Fleming didn't write?
Yes, and as I recall correctly, this is the first one that doesn't have anything to do with Bond in the title. Because even The World Is Not Enough was Bond's family motto or something.
Huh.
But this is, like, Die Another Day is so... Well, it's trite, like the rest of this movie. But, to your point, this movie is... Well, the premise at the first is interesting, but it's not a Bond movie.
No.
The beginning of this is bleak, it's interesting, but it's not what Bond is supposed to do. He's going in, he does an actual infiltration. They surf in, which is
interesting. This movie truly is just, you know, lifting the middle finger to subtlety the entire ride.
So we start off in Point Break, and we end up in them landing on the beach. He has a knife, which is a satellite positioning thing, which is bullshit. They have C4 hidden in a surfboard, which is also bullshit. But then they infiltrate by, like you said, they convince the helicopter to land early. They're all wearing the same thing. Bond sports a disguise, which is literally stealing someone's sunglasses.
Yes.
Because apparently they have the same tailor. So they get to the North Korean military base, which is close to the demilitarized zone, which, for those of you who don't know, after the North Korean War, which is still technically not ended, there was a bridge of land that is determined to be a demilitarized zone between the two countries that apparently the Americans decided to mine the ever-loving shit out of.
It's at the 38th parallel, and they mention that several times in the movie.
Yes.
Also, it's about a mile across.
Yes.
Which is not what this movie pretends.
No.
They pretend it's... the size of Maryland, which is bullshit, because all of the Korean Peninsula is smaller than Florida, so go fuck yourself.
Yes. So he lands in the North Korean camp, somebody takes a picture of him, and he's having this chat with Colonel Moon, Because Zhao has said so much more in this movie, which is why I thought that. And apparently somebody within British intelligence or the intelligence community outs Bond as if it's a really big
I thought
secret.
It was like his magic spy database or something.
I was going to say, yeah. you're giving it too much credit.
Yeah.
His spy Facebook.
No.
And on his Palm Pilot, it just says 007 license
to
kill.
The only reason I say that is because, you know, when, you know, the general asked him before, so after this, he's outed as a spy. Colonel Moon decides he's going to try and kill him, which never works well for anyone who tries to kill Bond. They go on a ridiculously absurd chase scene on hovercraft.
And flamethrowers are involved at one point.
Flamethrowers are involved, which I had to explain to my wife, are legal in all 50 states.
why did you have to explain that? Like, how did that conversation go?
Because this conversation is more interesting than this movie.
I'm not going to debate that. That's why I'd really like to discuss that conversation now.
And so... Zhao looks like he goes over.
Moon.
No. Zhao gets knocked off at some point, but it's fine. Colonel Moon gets sent over a cliff, where somehow Bond survives, as Bond always does, and then Colonel Moon's father arrives.
He survives by grabbing a bell, and he drops off the bell, he says, "Saved by the bell," because Dustin Diamond goes throughout this movie.
The bell tolls because the bell tolls for thee.
Zhao gets knocked off, by the way, in the C4 explosion, and he gets like half a face full
of
diamonds.
He does, yes. He's quite the carrot head in that sense. And
that was a terrible joke. Like, I can't let that one go. That was really bad.
Thanks, Max.
And so he gets captured. He is tortured for, I think, 14 months in determination.
14 months.
And
while the audience is tortured for 4 minutes or however long that song lasts.
Well, that's what happens when you listen to Madonna. And
she was good up until 1989 or so.
I was going to say, this is 12 years too late. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And so, Bond gets taken out of his torture. He's taken to the demilitarized zone, and
who did they exchange him for?
Is it Zhao?
Okay, yeah.
Who tried to kill a bunch of Chinese?
General Moon asks him, "Who was the person who, you know, who stole my son from me? Who was the person on the West who turned him? Yeah, charmed him." And Bond goes, and this is why I said it wasn't spy Facebook. The same person who sold me out.
Yeah.
And so
Mark Zuckerberg.
Exactly. Yeah. And so then Bond walks away, Zhao walks back to North Korea, and for some reason the North Koreans let him go.
Is this still the cold open? Because doesn't that happen after the song?
So we move past the cold
open. No, but we should stop here.
Yes.
Because, like, as much as I appreciate Thomas talking for this few minutes here, this part takes forever, but it's interesting because if this were any other non-Bond movie, this could be a very interesting movie. Because Bond, first of all, we should talk about, this might be the Pierce Brosnan movie where Pierce Brosnan is literally the worst spy ever. Because he walks up, I know I shouldn't quote other movies, but they say this in We Hate Movies when they do this. This is literally like going to a drug dealer and saying, isn't pot super illegal? Isn't this crazy? Because he walks up with the briefcase filled with what he calls conflict diamonds, which everyone else who isn't British, so therefore De Beers implicated, going, we would call blood diamonds. He goes, isn't it crazy that we're selling blood diamonds? Isn't that awful? Right?
Yeah.
And he's the one training them for weapons. Like, this is the most... he blows his cover in the first 6 seconds of this.
I just hate the fact that during this time period, everybody pretended like North Korea was a serious threat.
Well, but this is the other problem, which we can talk about later, but they so badly need Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm shocked that, like, the Daniel Craig haven't gone back to Putin as the bad guy, because, like...
It's coming.
The idea that someone... Again, the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea is half a mile wide, and it's filled with nothingness. That's what a demilitarized literally means.
Yeah.
And so, like, the idea that they have a giant fucking space laser, this makes Moonraker look like a cartoon.
The problem is, we talked about earlier, a while back, Tomorrow Never Dies, and the fact that he shows up and goes to Elliot Carver and basically goes, hey, I know you're an asshole and evil. And he's like, and he says it in the least understated way ever. And so then he just shows up in North Korea and does it again.
He does it even more bluntly here. To people who are surrounding him with guns, at least in Elliot Carver, it's almost ready repartee at a cocktail. Like, here, everyone else has guns except for him. And, by the way, when he lands in North Korea and he's surfing in, there are three people. I don't know where those other two people go, but we never see either of them again.
No.
So I assume it's kind of like on Her Majesty's Secret Service. No, Living Daylights, where they just die on that mission and we just never
see them. Couldn't survive the surf in. They were the double O's in training and they couldn't get past the surfing section.
Christ. But like you said, after he gets saved by the bell, he's captured by General...
Oh, the fact you just said that again hurts so much.
Because he's literally swinging on the percussion.
I understand, but it's still terrible.
And this is when we realize Bond has completely lost it by this point, because he says it to no one. There's no one else in the scene, so he practically, like, winks at the camera and goes, "Saved by the bell." So, and Purvis and Wade, who wrote this, must have just been like, "But what if he could say that?"
No, the worst part is I've been watching too many Bond movies with Nick, because he does that. I'm sitting there watching it with my wife, and I go, he says that, and I go, "Bada, bada."
I mean, like, literally, this is 2002, so he might as well have just gone, "He's a real Fresh Prince of Bel Air." This is a real Family Matters.
Well, that comes later when we find out exactly who the Colonel is.
That should have come up in The World Is Not Enough.
So what you're telling me this movie came out in 2002, was mocking early 90s, and what all it was missing was Bond or someone else going, "Did I do that?"
Aww.
If he had done that, I mean, to be fair, he lands in London as London Calling is playing, so they're not far off.
No, Didn't Joe Strummer, like, pass away the year before this movie came out?
True, and I believe around this time, a man in London, by being taken in by a London cabbie, actually got arrested for humming London's Calling on his way to Heathrow, so...
Why would that get him arrested?
Apparently it did. Like, this is a real story.
Yeah, he was drunk.
Yes, he
Oh,
was.
I see.
Now, this brings us to the Madonna song.
Why?
Is this the worst Bond theme?
I would put it up there, yeah.
Because, well...
It's the only Bond theme that contains the lyric, "Sigmund Freud, analyze this."
Yes.
I thought we had determined before this that the only lyrics to this song were, "I guess you'll die another day," and that was repeated ad infinitum.
No, you're getting the lyrics wrong. It's, "I die a..."
Oh my god, and everything in between that is nonsensical.
Yeah.
"I'm gonna die another day," yes and no. "I'm gonna die another day," something hobo. It's bad. B, at the end of the movie, there's the techno remix of a techno song.
Oh yeah.
And then C, Madonna thought because she was in this, she should do a cameo role, which is even worse. We'll get to it, because there's three terrible actors who are awful in general, and this is the only movie I've seen where Pierce Brosnan lets his Irish accent show through.
He just did not care.
He didn't care, and it's a shame, because after three movies, he hoped this would be a Bond piece where he could be Bond and explore his character, and he was sorely disappointed.
I think we all were. Now, just as a reminder to all the kids and Matt in the audience, remixing techno songs to make them more techno-ing was very common back then.
It's still common now. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, and the other side of it is, I saw Aladdin. It ends with the pop remix of A Whole New World.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you can make a ka-single, you make that ka-single.
Yes, you do.
Now... The Die Another Day theme is also weird, because it's the only Bond sequence where the plot is advanced via the music.
Yeah.
This is the torture montage when he's in the gulag and getting, like, stung by scorpions and then having the antivenom in him.
Really advance the plot?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yes and no, but generally, other than Bond shooting...
It's totally outside of it, darkness,
yeah. No, here's where I have a problem with that. See, so, when I watch this is an interesting point. You get through this, and there's... This idea, you know, Bond is tortured. It's interesting. The problem is the second he sleeps with Halle Berry, any notion of him being tortured having an effect on his personality or life goes out the window.
Well, by the time he walked out of the gulag, he looked well-fed, he looked tan, he still looked fit. The only difference was that he had a beard and long hair. I mean, other than that, he looked great.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that, exactly, but the once he figured out that his dick was still working, that was the end of all.
So it wasn't like for real torture like they do in actual North Korea. This was movie torture where they'll just make your hair grow out long.
They tickled him for 14 months straight. Yeah. Like,
that sounds terrible.
Well,
those North Koreans, man.
Yeah.
We'll get to like how this all falls apart later, but like
we haven't gotten to that already.
Well, the weird thing about this,
the plot yet.
I mean, but the weird thing about this is you could do a very interesting, gritty movie where Bond is tortured and wants revenge, but yet this isn't that movie. Like,
well, they kind of did that with License to Kill.
Solace is that? I mean, because like at the end of Casino Royale, where Vesper is turned and like for essentially blackmail reasons, that's what this kind of wants to be. But like after torturing for months, you'd think he would want like direct revenge. But this is bizarre. Like everything about this like falls apart, and it's also a very like again like Le Carré kind of like spy who comes in from the cold, or Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy kind of like very dark Cold War stuff where we literally see Bond being waterboarded and tortured and electrocuted and stung with scorpions and then given the...
Now, to clarify, we're talking about the 10-minute sequence in the very start of the movie to compare it to those sorts of things.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, this is the first of 9 movies that this movie pretends to be.
Okay.
Right. And then we end up with Robinson Crusoe version of Pierce Brosnan.
Yes.
And then the movie changes. Because, like you said, at this point... He wakes up and Moon gives him one last slap on the face and says, "You tell me who's the inside person." Moving on. And then, now, I will say an effective scene is where he's essentially told to walk the plank with the guns trained on him.
Also entertaining, suspenseful, like genuinely like, hey, there are some key elements to a really good scene here. Moving on.
Yeah. And then he walks into the foam, and he's like, "Oh, good, other Englishmen. Can I have some tea and some caviar and some blowjobs?" And
no,
then they immediately trank him.
No, but you can have tranquilizer.
And then he goes completely limp, and then they scan him. And what's the first thing they tell us when they scan?
Oh, yeah, so they're going through scanning and trying to figure out, oh, he's got lots of, you know, scorpion venom, and they're going through, oh, horrible liver. Yep, that's definitely him.
Yeah, I mean, literally, it's two scientists talking back and forth. They're like, well, there's no biological agents. There's no, he's been given histamines and antihistamines and blah, 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 blah. Scorpion venom, the anti-venom, and then... terrible liver. Well, it's our Bond.
And like, all those genital warts.
Oh. And every STD.
And so, you know, he's there. He wakes up. M is in the room.
Now, this scene was good. I liked this scene.
This was good. Like, there was a good amount of time where you left there. They did a really good job finding the angle to show that there was no screen between them. But there was. And then eventually you can see it. And that's really cool, like, you know, that they don't trust him because it's been 14 months, him being tortured, and information has been leaked that has hurt their operatives. So there's a genuine feeling they might not trust Bond.
Okay, so I'm going to agree with you for 4 seconds here.
Which is about the amount of time I believe that, too.
And then she goes, "Do you realize what we had to give up to get you back?" And he goes, "I didn't ask to be traded. I was trained to die." And that's a very believable 4 seconds. And then he gives up on the whole scene, and you can hear his Irish accent the entire rest of the time. And if you asked me if I thought Bond was Irish for this movie, I would have agreed with you, because he could not have given a shit and a half. He is not even acting, and he gets out of this whole predicament by turning into a superhero and literally stopping his heartbeat so that people come in to resuscitate him.
Now, I thought he actually did stop, but he was resuscitated by the CPR that the nurse gave him.
Stop your own fucking heartbeat?
That's what I'm saying. That's
master.
That was the thing. He had like the flashbacks, and it was like traumatic. And then,
so if you were in a car accident,
yes,
and then you dreamt about your car accident.
Oh, I'm not saying it's plausible.
Now, that's my whole thing, though. It's not that he wasn't able to stop his own heart. That was a legitimate cardiac arrest, but he was revived before the doctor. doctors figured out what was going on, and that's how he was able to escape,
no,
right?
No, because the way that scene was set up was, it was almost like...
It was intentional.
It was intentional, yeah. Because if it wasn't, you don't get up after a fucking curtain.
Well, what about the Bond quip then, when he, like, gets up afterwards, looks at the nurse like, thank you for giving me the kiss of life?
Because that's
the first
Bond
woman he's touched in, like... 14 months.
Ah.
Which is, he practically ejaculated. It's the fact that he almost died because it had been so much longer than 20 minutes since his last.
Thank God a woman nurse showed up because otherwise it would have been M.
I have that image in my head now. Thank you,
forever.
Nick.
It would have been sexier than some of the scenes later. We'll get there.
He escapes. He jumps off a ship, which is believable because he is Navy and they can do jumps like that into water, swims to shore, and walks into a really nice hotel he's been in before. We learned that. Walks up to the desk going, I'll have my usual room, in an open gown.
I actually love this sequence.
I do.
I think it's like the best part of the movie.
It is so ballsy and wonderful. It is great, but at the same time, you're just like... I feel for the guy on the other side of the desk because I'm like...
Well, they were going to call the cops and have him thrown out.
I will say from... Okay, so when he jumps, he bonds out of there. Like, it literally looks like a stage from GoldenEye from, like, the frigate stage where he sneaks around corners, comes up to the top, dives overboard, and they're in Hong Kong Harbor. From the second he gets out of the water and says Hong Kong Yacht Club... For the next, I don't know, 10-15 minutes, that might be the best part of the movie. Because he shows up in the hotel, he convinces them to send up his tailor.
They send him a masseuse. He immediately knows that the masseuse is not a masseuse and that he's being spied on. Like, it's glorious. And then even the fact when he goes, I want to get Zhao. And he goes, I'll have to talk. Like he you know, knows that the Chinese intelligence are watching him, throws the ashtray through the mirror. There, he goes, don't you know I always know your Chinese intelligence? He goes, I want to take out Zhao. He goes, I'll have to talk to Beijing.
And that's
downstairs. It is a wonderful scene. It's so much fun to watch. It is classic Bond.
Well, and it's one of the few times when Bond is doing, like, the rogue thing, that he is using his intelligence contact, even though he knows that they're against him, to his advantage. Like, that... There are glimmers of a better movie in this movie, and then it just turns into a fart joke. It
mostly when Halle Berry shows up.
It stops in Havana.
Which is literally the next scene.
Yeah.
Because he's in a vintage roadster driving down a beautiful stretch of Caribbean highway.
Before that, when he wakes the sleeper agent, is another good scene. It's a great scene! When he goes up and he's talking with the Tatos. It's not as good as the hotel scene, but it's still a good scene.
Great's a strong word.
Compared to the rest of this movie, it is exceptional.
Well, but again, that's the third movie. Because the second one is him being recovered and him being the escape Bond. But here it could be a Sean Connery, it could be a Pierce movie. But when he appears in that guy's, the sleeper agent's room, that's when we get the ornithology book that says, the one that was written by James Bond that we get the name from. There's little gidgets and gadgets on his thing. And that's when you realize this is the 20th Bond movie and they're going to allude to
every single
Bond movie. And it starts with this switch going off. And this is, if I recall correctly, the first one after Cubby Brock died. And so they're going to be like...
Well, Tomorrow Never Dies was dedicated to Cubby Broccoli, wasn't it? So this is...
Maybe this is the first one... No, you're right. So maybe this is two movies ago.
Yeah.
They needed someone. They needed... Michael J. Wilson is the other producer. He was the one who said, we'll slime the president in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yes,
So he shows up in every movie he produces. We needed more of someone else's voice. How about that?
That makes sense.
Tell me about this inside guy.
Okay, so... He shows up, tells these Universal Exports. It's probably the first time we've heard Universal Exports said in a while. Goes up there and they start talking, and it's like, you know, and the sleeper agent basically says, like, I love my country. Do not expect me to betray my country. Bond is like, no, I'm not asking for that. I'm looking for a terrorist. Goes, well, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. And it's like, I don't think this guy cares about anybody's freedom. So finds out that Zhao has gone to a gene therapy clinic that is on a small island off the coast of Cuba. Bond goes, well, I want to take him down, borrows a gun and some binoculars, and says, can I have a fast car? To which he gets a really old roadster.
Well, that's what was in Cuba at the time.
It was in Cuba. No, it's very believable. I enjoyed it. it's very fitting with the scene and the locale. He drives off. He shows up at a small resort, sees some assholes at the bar, orders himself a mojito, the most unbond drink he's ever had.
Oh, well, especially since he goes, his accent comes back mojito. For a second. Mojito. And then that's when Halle Berry shows up, and I want to delay her as long as possible.
Can we talk about the fact that she ripped off the Dr. No intro
that was
instead? I know that was intentional.
It was. Yeah.
I'm just saying we should talk about that instead.
Actually, no. Can we talk about this? Daniel Craig did it better.
Well, he did.
Yes, he did.
and frankly, her standing up acting isn't terrible. It's her speaking. Her speaky speak
and her horizontal acting.
The walky walk was good, but the speaky speak no good.
Said Aaron Sorkin. Now I will say, have you ever missed Joe Don Baker more? Because when you showed up in Cuba, I was thinking
Robbie Coltrane.
Because I wish there was because the whole thing was, I'm looking for Zhao. Well, the best way to get to North Korea is through Cuba, because I guess communism, right? But, I wish there was just some corrupt Chinese officer or Russian officer. And that's where, Robbie Coltrane, who died, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, you could have had Joe Don Baker back. It's not like he couldn't use $5.
Can we talk about, so go back to World's Not Enough. They make it look, it's really kind of left up in the air as to whether or not he actually died. He just got shot.
Well, he was dead.
No, okay, but even if he was dead, here's the problem.
He's played other characters.
Well, no, not even that. It's that they wanted to get a spinoff here for Jinx, which is Halle Berry, which we're going to get to. Mm-hmm. And so you can't just have Jinx like we had Felix Leiter. You also have to have her Washington counterpart, which is Michael Madsen. And so you can't have other people. Like that was the thing. Robbie Coltrane... Fine, he's a KGB former guy, he's a mafia guy, great, he doesn't need anyone else, right? Mm-hmm. All these people we're talking about, they're free agents, they're independent guys, or they're people out for themselves. Wei Lin from Tomorrow Never Dies, any other spy would have been fine. But here, they want a spinoff, so they need the whole cast of characters to show up, and we have two of the worst acting roles ever. And I don't usually take notes for this movie because Bond is so fresh and so clean. But my
that's the first
notes
time,
another day.
That's the first time I've ever heard Bond referred to as clean.
Well, but who gives a shit? Because in a Bond movie, if we forget the plot, we've done the right thing.
Yeah.
But in my I have a notebook because I watched this the other day. And it's my notes another day. I called it. I got baffled halfway through, and I was just trying to put everything together to make it a movie, and every time Halle Berry showed up, not only does her acting stop the movie dead, but her dialogue means literally nothing, because she's trying to outquip everyone who... She doesn't even need a line in half the scenes.
Well, I heard that when she got cast at the time, she was a big prima donna, which is why she's so prominent on the poster and everything, is because she was demanding extra lines from
the
producers.
Swordfish?
Right. Monsters Ball.
Yeah.
Monsters Ball was 2001?
Yep. Yeah, something like that. She won an Oscar before she did this, which is why she thought she had clout, I guess.
This is why you don't... never mind.
You don't get actors and actresses with... What? With pathos? With anything. With awards for Bond movies?
Why?
Judi Dench.
That's right. No, you're right. But they're in roles like that. Maybe Bond villain should be that. Maybe M should be that. But throwaway characters? Jinx should be a throwaway character.
Yes.
Yeah.
We need silence for a second. Effectively, Bond goes to a bar because...
Bond always goes to a bar.
Well, right. But who's the guy he's looking at?
Where are we right now? Are we still in Havana?
It's some random henchman that has nothing to do with the plot.
This is in the back of the bar, right?
So
a guy who points a gun at a waiter.
A random waiter goes, bring me another woman.
So we just know that this is a
bad dude.
Actually, there comes a scene after this that I do enjoy. So he meets Jinx. They boink like bunnies. Wake up the next morning. Jinx has left him in bed, which is a definite turnabout for Bond. But Bond needs to get to the island. Knows that apparently that this douchebag who pointed a gun at the waiter is going to the island. Goes to this guy's room. punches him out the second he opens the door.
And the prostitute on his
bed. The prostitute on the bed is going, and he goes, and he just goes, hi. And she's like, hi. And she goes back to reading her book. She just could not care less about that her John just got pelted.
She probably already had the money. What does she care?
Already had the money. She doesn't care. And that, to me, that was enjoyable. Not part of this movie, but just kind of funny. It was
again,
like,
it's another movie that got written into this movie, but it's a perfectly enjoyable scene.
Yes. Throws this guy on a wheelchair, steals his pass to the island, gets to the island. Goes to the island, manages to create a diversion to sneak to the back. Apparently, the secret door to get to the gene therapy clinic was in the communist star on Fidel Castro's hat's head that was in the mural in the wall. Because that's a really easy way to hide, like a hidden contraption.
So, we mentioned Halle Berry, Academy Award winning actress.
Oh.
Every time she speaks, you can just replace it with wah, 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 wah. Because
that would be better.
Yeah, because literally Bond is looking at binoculars.
Have we had a worse supporting character? I don't think there is a worse supporting character.
No, and we'll get to that because literally in my Die Another Day notes, it goes, is Halle Berry the worst actress?
Like, this is worse than Christmas Jones.
That's what I was going to ask.
I think this is worse than Christmas Jones.
No, this movie has the three worst actors in Bond movies because it's literally her, and then in my notes is anyone worse than Halle Berry? And then is anyone worse than Madonna? And then I was literally, is anyone worse than Michael Madsen as the head of the CIA?
He's because phoning the shit out of it.
I think the British agent who turned the blonde woman, she's pretty awful too.
Which movie?
Don't you dare say any bad words about Rosamund Pike.
I will say she at least has a backstory. Her character is fleshed out.
Yes,
she
was at least interesting. At least a backstory. Yes. Not great, but it's there.
Hey, of the two Oscar she didn't win, did she, Rosamund Pike? Okay, of the two, the Oscar winner versus the Oscar nominated person, I take the Oscar nominee in this case.
I'll grant you that. Bond finds Zhao. He's sitting underneath a technicolored mask.
Did we mention that Jinx was in the clinic and like just point blank shot that doctor in the face?
For no reason.
For no reason.
I have to discuss the fact that Bond movies get silencers wrong, and I don't want to do that.
And also, he walks through, what is it, like the Hall of Science at Disney World? But when Bond touches a star in Fidel's hat, he ends up just like with 3D renderings of DNA floating around through the air like it's Epcot Center.
Well, he walks through a room that looks like it came from Enter the Dragon.
Yes.
Like with DNA strands in it. And then he enters this really technical room that just doesn't look like it belongs anywhere near Havana. That's not meant to be mean towards Cubans.
No, it's just reasonable. He goes from driving an old Packard to the future. It's literally Tomorrowland. It's crazy.
I feel the need to bring this up because you just talked about silencers. Who has seen John Wick 2 yet?
I haven't. I haven't seen John Wick. I haven't seen that yet.
The scene in John Wick 2 where he's on the balcony and the other guy's walking and they're shooting silenced pistols at each other.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I had so much fun with that scene.
The John Wick movies are the most fun.
Okay, I'm good. I just had to bring that up because we're talking about silencers and I was laughing my ass off at that scene.
The best character in John Wick was the hotel concierge.
He's great. Yeah.
I love that.
Okay, we're good. Back to Bond.
Okay. Oh, no. We can talk about literally anything else because otherwise he's going to be dead another day. Yeah.
So Jinx kills the doctor and then sets an explosion in the room. Bond runs into Zhao under the Technicolor Dream Mask, has to wake him up because apparently he can't just shoot him in the head because he needs information.
He needs to quip him. No,
Does he know it's him under the mask initially?
Yeah, because you can see the diamonds in his face, he saw.
Yeah.
Well, he's trying to figure out who the traitor in MI6 is, and he needs the information from Zhao.
And rather than restraining him, he just wakes him up. This doesn't go well. Zhao manages to get away. Bond chases after him. Jinx tries as well. Fails. They manage to get up onto the parapets of this island. Zhao has managed to get away on a helicopter. Jinx is cornered by two Cuban guards and decides to strip down to her bikini and jump about 150 feet into, wink at the camera, wink at Bond, and then jump backwards 150 feet, roughly, into the ocean below where a motorboat is waiting to take her away. And then the Cuban guards fail to see that Bond is happening to hold a revolver and run off to go check something else out. From here,
how did Bond get off the island? I don't even remember.
Well, he goes
because he wasn't captured. No one was looking for him.
Yeah, but how does he still get off the island?
Well, it was through that other Cuban government official, because he goes to him next with those diamonds that he found with Zhao.
Oh, around the neck, the necklace.
Which is how he was paying for the procedure.
But he just didn't go see out of his face.
He literally went from the island to England. There was no gap.
Well, there was that one scene where they're like looking at the diamond, and then they see that GG engraving, which is how he knows.
Yes, no, you're right. They did. I had blanked that out.
GG. This is for Gustav Graves, which is a plot device. See, he'd be the bad guy.
I thought it was GG Allen. At which point, I thought this movie is about to get really messy really quickly.
So this is the point where Bond decides to go back to London because
reasons.
Reasons.
Well, because Gustav is doing his thing.
He's getting knighted.
Because after being alive for literally then only 14 months, mm-hmm. he's become so important that the Queen is going to knight him. And he is... again, Bond is a lot of things, and Cheesy is often one of them, but he has never flown into London playing London Calling.
No.
Because he has dignity. This is awful. This is the worst thing that has happened to Bond. And how do you know, by the way, that Gustav Graves is the bad guy? Well, when you watch it, he is supposed to present himself at Buckingham Palace, and people are like, where's Gustav Graves? He's supposed to be here by now, blah, 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 blah. And his secretary, played by Rosamund Pike, says he will be here any moment. And they look up at the sky... And Gustav has jumped out of a plane and is going to parachute. Yes. Which is bad enough as it is. But when he does it, the music changes to the bad guy theme. Did you notice that it goes, London is coming out? Bum, bum, ba-da-da-da. And like, it turns into an evil theme because we're supposed to know he's the bad guy.
The fact that he didn't have a wispy mustache. Like, I mean...
I was just wondering why they let him have the Union Jack parachute from The Spy Who Loved Me as opposed to Bond.
Because it's another wink and a nod to the fact that this is the 20th Bond movie. This is, again, why Pierce decided, you know what, fuck it, I'm Irish, let's just go with it. Because he could not have cared less, one cared about anything!
Well, no, because he wanted them to kill Bond with him. Like, he wanted to finish Bond and have Bond die.
Because he is the Alan Moore of Bond movies. Yes. I'm going to ruin Bond movies, like the rest of it, I've given him chlamydia.
Alan Moore
sure gave him.
Well, okay. Let's back up.
Bond books.
We need to back up. Alan Moore gives people chlamydia.
You read Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow? That's essentially how it ends.
No, every time Alan Moore has ever written a comic, the intention was to kill comics as a medium. Every time.
Yeah!
He has admitted to this. That was...
Yeah! I'm so topical. I'm going to have to edit the shit out of that.
The sound levels, I'm sure, were just jumping all over the place.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. It's okay. So Gustav
loves to fence because...
Why not?
Well, because Madonna had to be in the movie.
Well, he's apparently a Renaissance man because he can do literally everything because he never sleeps.
Yes.
Was that it? I honestly glazed over that completely.
There's
like,
a reason.
I could not give a shit.
There's a reason for that.
I know they did.
Reason, but it's a reason. So Bond decides to meet him at the London Fencing Club, which I actually buy as being a thing. What I don't buy is everything that follows from that line.
Yeah, so I'm a fencer. I used to be nationally rated. Here's the thing about that.
A fencer or offensive?
Both. If more people listen to this podcast, I could be Joe Rogan offensive, but I'm not.
Oh.
Here's the thing about that.
Shots fired, sir.
Indeed.
Here's the thing about that, too. I like Joe Rogan enough to not beat the shit out of me by his fans. Mm. So, we'll go there.
What about Adam Carolla? Is that still fair game?
I think
he's... Is he still alive?
My grandpappy would have told me about Adam Carolla in one of those man's shows.
With that Jimmy Kimmel dude?
Hey, Jimmy Kimmel's clearly still alive. He's hosting the Oscars this year.
Oh, yeah. Is he?
Yes.
Oh, Lord help us.
When they get to the fencing club, it's interesting because Madonna shows up wearing a corset for no reason.
That's not completely knotted off. Like,
so right. Bond has to do it.
Yeah.
And the thing is...
Is that not traditional fencing garb?
Well, actually, no. It is. It's what a coach would wear underneath because it's harder leather so that when you get stabbed, it doesn't hurt as much, right? Because if you're a coach, you get stabbed a lot.
You look more like a dominatrix.
However, you'd still wear something on your sleeves.
Yeah.
It's something you'd wear underneath or over a normal outfit. But I was going to say, I believe that James Bond is a fencer. Like, that's the kind of thing you'd learn at university.
Yes. Mm-hmm. At Oxford or wherever, you know, like.
However, that part of that scene lasts for 45 seconds because Madonna's trying to play it straight. Also, the fact that she married Guy Ritchie does not mean she gets to speak with an English accent. She's
I was wondering if this was the point in her life where she was married to Guy Ritchie.
You know what?
I hope so.
The English accent, she's in England. You can put on a fake English accent if you're in England.
Cry!
Hello, love. What's all this then?
I mean, to be fair, I guess technically Pierce Brosnan is as well.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between putting on, like, a southern accent as a New Yorker than is putting on, you know, a hackneyed accent as a Midwesterner for the
English. Yeah, Judd Baker putting on a douchebag accent.
That's just his normal speaking voice.
I was going to say the same thing about Michael Madsen. But, you know. That I believe. I believe that he knows how to fence, but again, they're fencing épée, and it starts out as a normal épée scene. He even makes a joke about keeping his tip up. But then you start betting for points, and it's $1,000 a point.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You can do it.
Yeah, so he's down 2 points, manages to get one in, and really pisses off Gustav Graves.
And this is also when he's being subtle about, what about if I bet these blood diamonds you paid for? Or sorry, conflict diamonds, because they're British and De Beers can go fuck himself. Yeah, I get you.
So then apparently Gustav gets really pissed off and pulls 2 sabers off the wall.
And then they go to saber fencing, which is different, which I'm like, okay, fine, people would know that if they're not fencers, but then it goes to axes and then they're freaking William Wallace, man, and they're throwing swords and then people at each other.
And so and then all of this going on, Bond finally manages to, because they're going for first cut on torso. Like, that's the point they're going for.
It's Act 3, Scene 4 of Hamlet. Like, it's literally, like, first one to bleed.
And so he gets a cut on Gustav Graves. And then it's like, and the blonde chick is like, that is enough of that. And it's like, and Gustav Graves goes, we're still in good fun. And you're like,
no.
You're about to try and kill each other. Like, there's no...
And they tore apart a beautiful fencing club. So.
Well, and that's what the doorman or whatever goes. He goes... It's okay, we needed to redecorate anyway. It's a 1,000-year-old fencing club in the middle of London. Like, great. Well, and that's the other thing that people aren't suspicious about. If Graves has literally only existed for 14 months, right? And he's a diamond merchant, whatever.
And he's already
become the king of shit. Like, you don't become knighted by the queen.
You don't even get
fencer.
Yeah, you don't get a spot on the Olympic fencing team.
Well, and the thing she said, too, is... eventually we realize that this is, spoiler, I guess, Little Moon, right? But he met Rosamund Pike at Harvard Fencing Club, and she and Madonna tells us that she won the silver at Sydney, which is 2 years before, which is also longer than 14 months ago! So none of this makes sense!
No, and so that's just a real... So another brief moment. Bond has showed back up to England. He's in London, lands on British Airways, and comes through Heathrow. And at this time, even then, London is the most watched city in the world. Yeah. And today, even more so. But No one notices him, goes to the London Fencing Club, tears up the damn place... Where you have to believe there's someone in intelligence walking through there.
Whoa. I'm going to stop you because they notice him.
Well, yeah.
Because as they're leaving, he gets handed a key and an envelope. And this, to me, is the most Le Carre spy shit in the place, right? He gets handed an old brass key and he goes under London Bridge. Not Tower Bridge, but actually London Bridge. Turns it like a thing and ends up in an old abandoned World War II era... tube station.
Yep.
And M is there, and M literally goes, Mr. Bond, essentially says,
what have you found for me?
Yeah. And he goes, so this is it. An abandoned station for abandoned spies. Like, this is a scene that deserves to be in a better movie!
No, there's so many scenes in this movie that deserve to be in a better movie. They're just surrounded by such an epic toiled sandwich.
So many?
Not the Q scene that's
not
about
to make a better movie.
No,
literally. Someone had an epiphany and wrote...
Did you not like the Q scene in this one?
No.
I loved the Q scene in this one.
It was John Cleese, just not John Cleesing enough. Every time...
I really enjoyed the... It's like, you really are cleverer than you look.
what's better than looking cleverer than you are. I enjoyed that as a quote.
Well, every time I see John Cleese, I'm just expecting him about halfway through a Bond quote. It's like, you nonce, you loser, you pathetic bastard.
You mean you think that someone should get roles not because older British men died?
Yes.
But he started doing this before the original Q died.
That's true.
They brought him in to be R.
Now, I will say, The Invisible Car has the dumbest reveal of anything.
Because it parodies the silly walk bit from Monty Python when he's walking behind
it. He does. I will say, though, it might be the only time that Pierce looks honestly surprised by a Bond gadget. I mean, no.
I love it because he's sitting there and he's like, you've been down here a little too long, haven't you?
Yes. But before that, this is the most fan service dumb scene. And people complained about Spectre. They haven't seen Die Another Day.
Yeah.
Because they walk through Q's gadget lair, right? Yeah. And he literally has the jetpack from Thunderball.
The suitcase from Russia with Love.
And the knife blade in the shoes from Russia with Love. And he touches the jetpack and it goes up a little bit. He goes, I can't believe this thing still works. Whackety smackety. And Q even goes, here's your new watch, Mr. Bond. I believe this is your 20th.
Christ.
Yeah. We get it. Remember when Skyfall celebrated the 50th anniversary and actually made a Bond movie instead of just a clip show?
But that's just it, like, because we've all been next to that person who is like at like a Marvel movie or whatever, going, do you know who that is? Do you know who that is? Do you know who that is? He's gonna get another Infinity Stone. Like, that's bad enough, but when the movie is literally kicking you in the balls and saying, did you know this was in another Bond movie? Like, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like, it's honestly, like, a shame because, like, it's 2002. We have IMDb, right? And people have seen the Bond movies. By that point, it's on every Spike commercial break, and it's on every TBS special. We've seen them all, man.
And here's we have to step back just, like, a scene, which is that, so he shows up, basically tells Gustav Graves he knows that he's full of shit, that he knows that the diamonds are conflict diamonds or blood diamonds. Right, and then at the end of this whole scene, Gustav Graves is like, hey, I'm doing something pretty kick-ass in Iceland. You want to come? It's a lot of fun. You want to come? It's like, he's like your seven-year-old buddy. He's like, something really cool is coming. You want to come? You want to come?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, you know this guy knows exactly what's going on, and you're bringing him along for the why?
Well, the thing is, Graves, spoiler, is Lil Moon. Knows who Bond is before Bond knows who he is. He should take him out, man. Yeah. Why do this? Like, it's one of the few times where the villain knows who Bond is before Bond does. Do something other than so does the audience, because we have dramatic music for no reason.
So also, how is he this rich? Did they explain it?
Through the diamonds. Through the diamonds.
Yeah, but there weren't that many diamonds.
Well, see, no.
He's copying them.
Diamonds aren't that.
Is was that it?
They're chemically identical to the conflict diamond, so he...
Of Sierra Leone, yes.
So,
yes, but Matt's right. It's not diamonds. It's not enough to launch a secret satellite into space with a space laser
and an ice castle.
No, because diamonds aren't that rare and they're not that valuable. They're just... You don't...
Well, I thought he was copying the ones that Bond gave him because they're chemically identical.
But that doesn't matter. A diamond's a diamond.
Listen, no, he's Quinn, you don't have to justify a bad movie. You know,
he's laundering diamonds. That's what he's doing. The problem is that diamonds just aren't that valuable to do something that quickly in 14 months.
And still launch a secret satellite into space.
Yeah.
Which is not secret. Like, literally the press goes, so what are you doing? He goes, it's not a surprise. We just haven't revealed it yet. It's still a surprise. How did you launch a satellite into space? Again, when you look at Tomorrow Never Dies and there's just a satellite on a pedestal, it's silly enough. But the guy's already an established billionaire. He shows up 14 months ago. If a satellite-owning billionaire showed up 14 months ago, everyone would be watching him.
I don't think the 2002 North Korea rocket program could launch a satellite. Like,
no. They can't launch a satellite today.
Accidentally, like.
I like that. That one's good.
We haven't even gotten through enough of this movie, considering we've been talking for nearly
an hour. We can glaze over around the next half of it.
Yes. So real quick alike.
We go to Iceland.
We go to Iceland and we end up in a snowmobile castle.
Was it Iceland or Greenland?
Iceland.
Iceland.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was one of those lands.
They said Iceland. Come to Iceland. Now, I agree with you. It should have been Greenland.
Yeah, because there were like some, there was some serious tundra going on.
There was some serious tundra going on.
And glaciers. Bond
drives to it, as you do from England to Iceland, in his new Aston Vanish, which gets
V12 Vanquish, I believe, was the car.
I believe John Cleese's line was, Aston Martin calls it Vanquish. We call it the Vanish.
Oh, yes.
Could this have been more of a Ford movie? Because in this time, Ford owned... Aston Martin, they owned Jaguar, which is what Zhao drives, and they owned Land Rover.
I think they make those hovercrafts too. So.
And they do make the Land Rovers. And also, I think they make his suits.
And his electric shaver that he's got.
Tom Ford? I think that's related.
No, oh, you're right. It is Tom Ford. Oh, wrong Ford. Oh, damn it. Oh, damn it. That was this close. But yeah, so they end up in the Ice Fortress, and he's pretending to be a science writer at this point, and this is when...
Is that what it was?
Well, and then Jinx shows up to trade barbs with Rosamund Pike, right? And he was sharing his Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, I think I got the thrust of it.
And then the ice castle...
So bad!
And then the ice castle melts, and yeah.
No, you're trying to jump far ahead. So essentially, there's a press conference, not unlike this movie. If you've seen Tomorrow Never Dies, just rewatch Tomorrow Never Dies and watch this, because it's the same thing. Megalomaniac, who's a business mogul, wants to stop the world, and so there's like literally the movie is the same as Tomorrow Never Dies, just shittier. And so essentially, after the whole press conference thing happens, where he says, I'm going to present to you Icarus, which will help you grow crops with a death laser. And the sun will never set because of my death laser. It will be a second sun because of my death laser. This is for peaceful uses because it's a death laser. And then we cut to the fact that there's Korean generals who want a death laser.
Also, Mr. Kill is here.
Mr. Kill, yes. Generally, his name is Mr. Kill. This movie truly is just screw subtlety.
Yes, there is a henchman in a Bond movie named Mr. Kill.
And
what was Bond's, you know, wackety smackety duel about that one?
I don't remember.
He said something like that's a name to kill for or something. You know,
name to die for.
Name
I guess.
To die for. Or yeah.
And so effectively, what happens is what Bond escapes. Kinda. There's a race. There's a chase. Bond ends up on a land speed
record rocket car. Because that's what Gustav Kerr is.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Well, we also forgot, guess who's in the hotel at the same time?
Jinx. Yeah. Who is supposed to be another writer for another thing or something. God, this
all I know is that they do the Goldfinger laser bit with her, except it's with a diamond cutter, and it's toward her head.
And she can get out herself.
No, of course she can.
She needs Bond to get her out. And that's one of the few stages of real acting, because maybe they actually pointed a laser at her head and made her think she was going to die. She's only good at acting when she's mildly in an action scene and not speaking. She doesn't deliver a single line well. And it's a shame, because there are so many better actresses who could have done that. Halle Berry might be the most overrated actress in Hollywood at this time, and now she's long gone because of that.
And Catwoman. Screw you.
That came out 2 years later.
How did that movie get made?
Because she was supposed to be big, and you should listen to the episode of How Did This Get Made about Catwoman.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
No, because honestly, like, if we did it for myopia, none of us would have anything to say. It's unwatchable. Even Sharon Stone is so stony in it, she turns to marble at the end of the movie.
Wait. Sharon Stone is a bad actress?
She's a bad guy who turns into a bad actress who turns into stone at the end of that movie. Because she has a face cream that turns women into stone.
What?
Oh, yeah, that's what that was,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, God. Why are you reminding me of this movie? That one might actually be worse than what we're currently discussing.
Oh, it definitely is.
The director is a guy named Pitoff, I think.
I never saw it, and I'm glad I didn't.
Oh.
I think I watched it on an airplane.
It aired on my college's movie channel. Like,
I watched it for about 15 minutes because I was like, I love Batman. And then I was like, Batman is not in this. I'm going to watch something else.
With Batman in it.
With Batman actually in it. I'd rather watch Schumacher than most of that.
Oh,
and I watched the riff tracks on Flatliners, and that's bad enough.
Oh.
Not the riff tracks part, the flatliners part.
Yes.
It has every Baldwin in it.
It's a, I guess, Bond movie, yeah. Ice Hotel was kind of cool. Like, the setting itself,
it's
I like.
It's a genuine thing.
It was a thing that a Bond movie should do.
Yeah. Yes.
They actually built it from scratch. I learned that on the Tribune.
Nice. I mean, it really looks something like Out of the World of Tomorrow. Now, yeah. What we haven't talked about is that this is 2002, and there's a mixture of good CGI and really bad CGI, and this part fluctuates between the two of them, right? Because the castle is real, and that helps, right? And there's inside stuff, and I know that this is something that they do in Scandinavia, where they make the ice castles and the palaces and the hotels and that kind
of
thing.
Has anyone else been to an ice bar before?
I've been to one where they have the shot glasses in ice, but not an actual all-out ice bar.
I've been to one, and it was a huge waste of money. It was so expensive.
Yes.
But was it cool?
It was cold.
Yeah, it was cool, but all the drinks were like super overpriced.
Hey, alcohol.
And your cup started melting after a while.
Alcohol do that.
When I was in college, my friends, we all froze this giant pitcher. Well, we accidentally froze this thing that ended up in the shape of a pitcher, and we just poured beer in it.
I went to a university in Ohio, and I just drank a lot in the cold. We had hot cider.
It was like an ice bar.
Yeah.
In my pants.
So, I will definitely agree that the bad CGI, like, none of the CGI aged particularly well from this movie, but the bad CGI looked
when he's surfing because they're...
Well, I will tell you, how do you tell it's a bad CGI movie? Well, after the ice surfing scene, we've seen, well, we actually talked about that, but we didn't talk about the fact that it opens with a bullet sequence, right? The gun barrel sequence.
Yeah.
But this time, and the only time in Bond history, we see the bullet coming back. Because when Bond turns to fire, we see the gun bullet coming back down the barrel.
I remember when that was a huge deal.
And that is the most CGI cartoon flat gray. It's not like bullet mildly matte shiny gray. It's literally like Crayola crayon gray coming back down the barrel. And that's... It's dumb enough that you see blood coming down a sight of a sniper rifle. This is bad. 20th Bond movie, guys. We haven't gotten it right yet.
We like really derailed. Where are we even at?
Oh. We're at the ice palace melting.
Okay.
When did we get the reveal that Miranda Frost was the traitor? The Rosamund Pike character?
I mean, that's where we are.
Okay.
That's
when they started to turn everything. Yeah.
He sleeps with Rosamund Pike in this movie.
Because at this point we know that Rosamund Pike is supposed to be protecting Bond because of X. We see a scene between her and M, and she knows that Bond is blank.
Oh, he gets to use his cool watch gadget.
He does. He cuts a hole in the ice to go underground using his watch.
Lead. And the...
Yeah, can we talk about that for just a brief moment? I really don't want to, but I'm going to. He cuts a hole in ice that looks to be at least about a foot thick. Of ice.
Right.
Jumps into water that is...
Oh, hypothermia doesn't exist in this universe.
Like, no, because, you know, when you jump in water that's freezing cold, the first reaction your body has is, there's two things. First of all, your body tries to inhale regardless of whether or not you're above or below water. And the second thing that happens is your heart goes into a potential bit of shock and could have a heart attack.
Well, and your body rictuses. Like if you jump off into a pool that's, do the polar bear club thing, your first thing your body wants to do is grab onto the ridge because you tighten up and Bond swims for 100 yards. Now, we didn't talk about the coolest gadget, which matters a lot in this scene. Bond has a ring. It's the only
That's what I was talking about.
And it's
not
a ring that is he wears on his ring finger. It looks mildly ridged, but when he twists it and touches it to a glass surface, even bulletproof glass, it shatters because it's a high frequency pulse.
Wouldn't that make people's ears bleed as well?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
But I mean, at least it's a cool actual gadget. It's something that you imagine a spy has. Now, it looks like something ribbed for her pleasure. Or something you'd get out of a Cracker Jack box. It looks fake. It should be in a class ring or something. But it's at least a neat idea. Something they haven't thought of for Bond. And he uses it like 4 times in this movie. So it's at least useful as opposed to the MacGuffin that we talked about. Like a chest-high wall in a Halo movie or a head cut. Like something that cuts a string that's exactly at head high like they have in Tomorrow Never Dies. or something to shut Denise Richards up, which is only in the world.
My least favorite one is the stupid wire cutter on the car that is.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's talking about.
Oh my god! So convenient that this wire was suspended in the exact range that my wire cutter allows.
That just happens to be under the BMW logo. Hey, at least this movie is—he's back in an Aston.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, as everything falls apart, Bond reveals himself. He notices that there just happens to be a carabiner hanging from a hook in the skylight. And he manages to save Jinx from a room filled with Goldfinger lasers.
Jinx is such a bad spy.
And an unconvincing actress. Like, honestly.
Yes.
Denise Richards sort of come back and she would have been better.
She gets saved from the lasers, then they capture her again, then they decide to melt the palace to drown her, and Bond still saves her.
Because why not ruin $100 million castle for one person?
Oh, and Mr. Kill gets killed during the laser scene, so...
Which is funny.
Yeah.
He loses a hand, too, so that they can get out of the room.
Yes.
Which wouldn't work, but why not?
But it's a fun gag. Okay, essentially there's a fingerprint... thing to leave the room, and so they cut off his arm to get his own fingerprint.
Okay, I'm gonna state this very clearly. Red Dwarf did it better 15 years earlier.
Yeah. Here's the thing about this movie. Again, too much CGI for a movie that doesn't need CGI. You can have practical effects. Now, the cool thing about the next scene is Bond ends up in his car, and it's a race against Zhao. This scene is probably, I think, the fourth Pierce movie in the row that has a vehicle chase. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good vehicle chase because hovercrafts unfortunately move about 6 miles an hour.
Well, I just don't know where Zhao got all the, like, it seemed like he knew exactly what gadgets Bond would have on his car. And so he built his car to have the exact same
dick measuring contest as far as tech goes. Yes. But it's at least mildly entertaining.
Yeah.
It looks like something out of Spy versus Spy.
Because yes.
Literally, they're one-upping each other with, like, well, I have surface-to-air missiles, while I have 8 surface-to-air missiles, while I have heat-seeking missiles, while I have a shotgun that shoots out heat-seeking missiles, and scene.
It's like a 7-year-old pretending that the stick he's holding is a gun.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it... Oh, now, yeah. That being said, Zhao is ultimately defeated because Bond's invisibility returns right at the right moment.
Yeah,
because
he disabled it with the machine gun first, and then it heals itself somehow.
Because of Q contrivance.
Because it's a computer. It literally reboots 6 times.
Okay.
And then I'm not saying it's less stupid, but that's what it is. There's even a little progress bar, like it's Windows 98 updating. Right?
It was the whole way through. It's like it's rebooting. And you're like,
that's... And Windows XP is much more efficient. But, at this point, like, they're going back and forth, they're chasing each other up the Guggenheim spiral staircase the whole way, because Jinx at this point is in a melting ice castle, so she's literally drowning, and we suddenly, I guess, decide she's necessary for the plot.
Yeah, like, what about all the other people that are dying in the hotel?
No, they all left.
Oh, yeah, she was, like, locked in the... Yeah, they locked, I forgot about that.
Everyone else had left.
Yeah, the rest of the set had closed, apparently. Whatever. And so... Zhao gets a runoff because the invisibility returns. Bond turns on his ice spikes, which, as someone who lived in the Northwest or Northeast for a while, it helps to have ice spikes on ice the whole time you're racing your car, I think.
Yes.
But who cares? He can retract them, whatever. Hides. Zhao drives into the water. Bond shoots a chandelier on top of him, and he says, "Ice to see you," or whatever. You know,
I don't recall any quips. I just recall Zhao screaming,
right.
And
it's
then
the one time in the movie when we could have had a quip and we didn't.
No, because Schwarzenegger ruined all.
I was just gonna say that, yeah.
Forever,
and 3 years before.
Yes,
And yet I buy any of them more than Jinx lines. And then Bond decides to ruin his car to save Jinx, which is the dumbest thing ever. So he drives up finally to Jinx's room, rams into the door, breaks the ice. Literally, not hyperbolistically. She flops out because at this point she's been underwater for a while, she's unconscious, and then rather than do anything else, he shatters his front windshield because that was necessary.
With the ring.
With the ring, because I think that's the third time he's used it.
I think so.
And then drives down the spiral staircase again to dump her in a hot spring that has been established before.
And the movie ends, right?
No. We have another entire act.
Yeah, I actually did check the time at this. There's another 30 minutes left.
Mm. I thought it ended here. And it would have made perfect sense. But it doesn't.
Back to Korea.
So I'm going to catch the plot up real, real quick.
Thank you.
We see a scene where Jinx and Bond are watching a plane load wherein we see General Moon, and we see Gustav Graves loading on with some gidgets and gadgets. After we know that Graves at this point has established the space laser, and they're trying to assassinate Graves. They miss the shot because the cargo's in the way, so they cut through the fence to try to get on the plane. They get on the plane by cutting through the fence, grabbing onto the landing gear, getting sucked up inside, and then we have our final scene.
Quick question, though. When they're cutting the fence, they're using pliers. Didn't one of them have, like, a watch with a laser in it?
Bond?
Sure did.
Already got used. We can't use it again.
Right. This is literally like a video game where you start the new level with new stuff. No, because this literally could have been done in 6 seconds, considering he cut through, as I think Daniel pointed out, foot-thick ice in about 7 seconds, Thomas did. And this takes... They're literally with both hands clamping as quickly as they can. It is... Again, there's three movies going on here, and this is the one where they only have real-life things. Yeah. And it's a shitty scene.
Now, this villain plot, correct me if I'm wrong, he is trying to get rid of all of the Mayans to have a land invasion of the other Korea, correct?
As opposed to
using the fucking death laser that can do anything?
This is like a localized Death Star he has, right? Like, literally.
Let me just, like, why not burn down half of South Korea?
Take out Seoul.
Yeah, like, you have a laser.
Also, from a screenwriting point of view... Something named Icarus is destined to fail, right?
Yeah.
You can't call it flashlight.
The writer took a Greek class.
Didn't they make some sort of, like, Icarus got too close to the sun, blah, 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 so we'll get close to the sun.
Right, but that means literally the whole movie was set up for... And this is Christmas Jones, right? Because it's just Bond to say, Icarus got too close to the sun, like... Really? I mean, you're not wrong, Matt.
Yeah.
But that means you're smarter than the screenwriters who probably spent 18 months working on this script.
I think out of all of the bad villain plots, like, this is the most straightforward. You have a giant death laser. Use it to accomplish your goals.
Don't take out the military base.
Exactly.
Because here's the interesting thing. When you go through the pantheon of bad villain ideas.
There are plenty of them.
And there are. No, there are. But generally, what happens that the villain does that takes the villain out is that he's an idiot when it comes to taking out the hero.
Yes.
When he attempts to take out, like, the world, his goal to take over the world is generally, like, it could be half-baked or just that, but it's generally pretty decent. This one's really good, you know, take out really good, this really awesome weapon. You know, he sucks at taking out the hero, as per usual, but you're using this weapon. I had never thought about it in the most ham-fisted, dumbass way.
Well, what about a conventional, like... Conventional bombing would do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I mean, and like, I've been rewatching some of the Marvel movies recently, and I'm like, this is a plot that an Avengers villain would use, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's literally a space laser destroying.
They also have vehicles that existed at the time that are built for getting rid of mines.
Right. Like, well, I mean, the first scene is literally hovercraft.
Bond shot them.
I know.
He shot them.
It's the dumbest. Like, this bothered me out of the entire movie. Why? You can ransom the world. You have a death laser, but let's invade South Korea?
Well, and at first, they're like...
With cars?
You have a death laser that can stop things from shooting it down. I mean, you...
Well, and, I mean, just even dumber, it's a peninsula. You can float around them.
Or no, that... And then the other thing. Why did he need to have it on his wrist?
I don't know. What was
the necessity of having it...
Why did he need a mech suit?
Because then we'd get lightning bolts,
because
CGI.
Because we couldn't do this in Japan. And this is
because his favorite movie is Return of the Jedi, and he wanted to shock people.
Yes.
This is 2002. The first X-Men movie had already come out. Like, this is practically like a Magneto scene. Like, this is awful. Hey, and the first X-Men movie is better than this.
Much better.
Not by much.
Do you know what happens to... This is a better Halle Berry movie, when X-Men was a better Halle Berry.
Right, that's right! After this, she did X-Men 2 before she did that.
Also a better movie.
Much better than this.
I think the first.
Let's go watch an X-Men movie. Let's just call the podcast
we did the
now.
First one already. We have done? Our second fencing scene between Halle Berry and Rosamund Pike.
What was the point?
Because Halle Berry gets to say that she was shot through the heart and you're to blame. Or no,
I broke her heart.
I broke her heart.
Because she gets stabbed. Did we talk about the fact that she wins by stabbing her with the Art of War?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Which is something that what's his name quotes all the time. Little moon and big moon, full moon, whatever.
Waning moon, waxing moon, waxing crescent.
No waxing, no waning gibbous.
Well, did we get to the part where Little Moon kills Big Moon with that mech suit?
Yes. Oh, well, you know we're there, so
okay.
Go ahead.
Well,
he said it. There we go.
Pretty much. I mean, Gustav Graves brings in that North Korean general, and then he reveals, oh, hey, I'm your son, and he demonstrates Icarus across the minefield, and the general says, no, stop this, takes out a gun and tries to shoot him, and then the son electrocutes him with that 100,000-volt mech suit thing, and then shoots the dad instead. And
the other generals are totally cool with it.
Yeah.
It's a weird scene because, well, a lot of things. It's a screenwriting nightmare, right? Because, like, the kid is quoting The Art of War, mm-hmm. which his dad has said to him before. It's how he convinces him that, like,
that
he's the son, right? Like,
yep.
But the problem is, the dad is the one who understands the Art of War. Like, the whole thing is that he has all this wealth and power, and the dad, who is a communist, is supposed to assume that the kid has become corrupted by the wealth of capitalism mm-hmm. or whatever.
How many billions of dollars does the Kim family have stashed in Swiss bank accounts?
A and B, that's not the thing. Because the whole kid was supposed to be like, I'm going to create a death laser to save Father Korea or whatever. And so, like, that should be exactly what the dad wants.
I'm going to save communism by using capitalism.
But even still, like, I'm going to turn capitalism against itself. Makes sense, whatever. But the dad's like, you've corrupted yourself. Fine. The dad read The Art of War even more. The son is somehow like, I'm the dad now! Like, that whole... But the thing is, there is a Thor slash Hamlet slash whatever... I say Thor because what's his name did it. Who did Thor? Who directed Thor?
Kenneth Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh, who has two Academy Awards for doing Shakespeare.
And the Wild Wild West.
He didn't have an Academy Award for Wild Wild West.
Shouldn't he have, though, don't you think? Wasn't
and
that
played Professor Lockhart in the second Harry Potter movie.
Oh, yeah.
Since we're going straight to the Wild Wild West, in my saddle. I forget how to say it. I felt a boob for the first time in that movie. So, not Jeremy's, who I grabbed right then.
I don't know what's going on.
Wasn't that a joke in that movie about...
Yes.
Okay.
But it was also real life. Hi. What I was going to say about that, there's a scene going on that deserves to be in a better movie because they're supposed to be almost debating military philosophy. Like, you're going to destroy us by having a weapon so powerful that other people are going to want to destroy us, right? It's a Cold War metaphor in a mm-hmm. scene. The problem is, it's not set up at all. And so everyone has to die. Like, literally the rest of this movie is like, you're wrong, Dad! I'm right! And then we end up with a plane crash into a death beam?
Dude, why are they on a plane?
Well, no, okay.
Right?
I don't understand why they're on a plane. I don't understand why he brought everything with him. Like, all his cars, all that stuff.
See, like, this scene makes sense if it's on the ground before he takes off, and he has this argument before he goes off on his own and then realizes he's wrong. But he doesn't. It just ends up in a death explosion.
And then... Can we talk about the helicopter? Because let's just jump ahead a little bit. So
first we got to get to the Bond villain death.
No. So Bond fights Gustav Graves. Halle Berry fights the blonde chick. The fight between Halle Berry and the blonde chick was slightly more entertaining than the fight between Bond and Gustav
because
Graves.
Because boobs.
Yes. And blades. Yeah. Because boobs and blades go very well.
Is that a Russ Meyer movie?
It just might be. Either that or it's Rule 34, and I'm positive that one of those is correct. So they both win. Bond is trying to figure out a way out. Halle Berry has won and is just leaning in a corner because, hey, you know, a fiery plane isn't so bad.
Yeah, Bond will fix it for her.
Bond will fix it. So they go down to the cargo hold, see a bunch of cars, and those were not the correct way to get off the ship. I'm glad they all knew that. And they get on the helicopter.
Now, some interesting points. I don't know if you can cold start a helicopter while it's falling. I do know this. I once again, not claim to be an expert.
Thanks for sounding like David Herman just then for a second. I do know this.
Listen, I know from flight simulators and other things that starting a plane or a helicopter takes a set amount of time. It is not like starting a car. You cannot just put the key in the ignition and turn it on. Yes. There is a procedure, and it usually takes about 20 minutes.
Now, if I may, I will put on the mindset of the producer here and say, fuck off. You liked the first 10 minutes of GoldenEye. And this is a perfect end book, like, you know, this is it. This is the bookmark at the end, because he starts in the cold open of GoldenEye, starting a plane by free diving into a plane
that was already going.
But he has to free dive into it and then pull it up, and then it ends with him starting a helicopter in midair. Like, it is symmetry. It's shitty symmetry, but that's what I'm sure they thought they were going for.
I'm sure.
I don't know if they knew this was the last Pierce Brosnan movie, but they might have looked at the dailies and said, yeah, no, this is it.
This is my question. So he gets in the helicopter, manages to make it. So why were all of Gustav Graves' diamonds in the helicopter?
Because they pried him out of Diamond Face, and then they said, you know what? Since he's dead, because a Marvel hero, when you pry the diamonds out, he's dead.
And this goes back to the same point. If those were all of his diamonds, you can't do shit with that many diamonds.
No, you can't. No. But then that's the other. So for Zhao, the diamonds in his face that get left there, like, you know, I was talking with Christina when we watched this, like, why didn't those get taken out? I'm like, I can't think of why you would not take the diamonds out. There's no veins or arteries running through your face that are so dangerous that you can't yank anything sitting out at skin level. There's no reason they were still there.
To make him less identified.
Well, it made him look like a Bond villain. That's why.
Well, then we get the cold cut where we just hear off screen Halle Berry goes, "Don't take it out."
I have to say, I never understood that joke as a kid. And that was still so contrived.
Well, this movie was truly subtle. The entire way through was just the biggest middle finger to subtlety.
And then in his accent, he just goes, "Ava Magara, I'm not going to take out my precious jewels."
I know,
this would have been funnier.
But his accent is gone by this point. He's just like, I don't fucking care. And then we just end with this kind of wet fart of a scene where she's just playing in diamonds and giving him a diamond HJ or whatever. I don't know what happens in this scene. But
you know, the funniest thing about that scene was watching it last night, and my wife goes, at least it's accurate underwear for what she should be wearing underneath.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a sports bra. And I'm like, that is what you took from this scene. I'm okay with that.
Well, they land the helicopter next to a hut, and they have, like, apparently billions of dollars worth of diamonds, and it's just, we have to return these to the government because reasons, and
I don't care how clear they are, I don't care how colorful, you know.
And then we have a shittier version of the techno remix of Die Another Day, which is already a techno-ish song, and here's the problem. Madonna already has kind of a lower voice. She could have done a kind of a song that sounded more classy, and they decided to make it even more techno by the end. It's just,
I was about to say no, but then I remember the Dick Tracy soundtrack where she actually does sing on it and sounds fairly good.
Well, I mean, she's talented 15 years before this, but the problem is, it's not that she's less talented now. She's just so big of a celebrity that she can do whatever she wants, and so no one can tell her no. That's why sometimes it's nice to have, like, Adele was big, but before 21 came out, she had a good album, and then 21 became a great album, so she had some room to be affected, right? Yeah. But by this point, the techno remix that takes us out is just, like, literally, Bond needs to die. And that's why I'm almost glad that it died for a bit. Pierce Brosnan might be the most disappointing Bond who's not disappointing as Bond.
He was just, he got the worst scripts
ever. He started with a great one, though.
Yeah.
And then it just went.
We didn't talk about this as much, but everyone has better quips than Bond. Everyone quips when Bond doesn't even quip. Like, ooh, everyone
wait,
is
no, quipping. Hold on. No, no. We missed a crucial scene.
Oh, oh my god, the last scene of the movie!
No, the scene right before the Halle Berry James Bond scene. So earlier in the film, after Bond comes back to London, he puts on a VR headset as a new training tool that Q has come up with. But in the second to the last scene in the movie, it's very weird. It's very jarring because Bond is back at the boathouse, it's the headquarters of MI6, and just walks in and sees Moneypenny in the room before M's room, and they have their usual jibs and jabs, and they start making out. And you're like, this is very weird. And then, you know, you realize, like, you know, R walks in and you realize Moneypenny is, like, leaning back on the floor and her blouse is slightly unbuttoned and she's wearing the VR headset. It's like, you know, yes, it's very difficult, isn't it? Yes, very hard, very hard. And you're like, oh, my goodness.
Well, and even Cleese looks up and goes,
wait a minute.
Wait, what? And, like, kind of looks off like she's smelling a fart just off stage. And it's a shame because I really like Samantha Bond as Moneypenny.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first real kiss between Bond and Moneypenny it's not a real kiss, but it's...
Well, like you said earlier, Brosnan wanted to kill off Bond just like he killed off Robin Williams' career with Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mm.
This is that scene. Like, this is literally everything. How do you wrap everything together? Well, you practically let M die, and then you accidentally please her at the end, you save the day, and then you make out with Moneypenny as the last girl. And it's all a dream. And you're just like... It's really a wet fart of an ending. Like, it's awful. Yeah. Now, I will say, we'll get there eventually, of course, but Spectre, where you have Moneypenny actually being a field agent who is back in the office doing office things, and then Spectre, she's an active agent in the field. Like, I like that because it shows she's worth something.
Mm-hmm.
I wish Samantha Bond didn't end with being, like, essentially insulted in the last 5 minutes of this movie.
Yes. Because through the entire series, she's held up as a, you know, a strong, competent woman who's got her own outside. It's not like strong, independent woman. No, she's got a character she's set up. She doesn't need Bond, but she enjoys the jibs and jabs. Then it's like, no, she's just the same. Yeah, it takes away any of the development you built. You just kind of stripped it all out.
So we're done. This is it. This is the end of Die Another Day. Is this the worst Bond movie?
Yes.
It ranks up there, yeah.
I will go out on a limb and I will say this is the worst Bond movie.
Jeremy and Matt look unconvinced.
I will ask what you think is worse.
I would have to think long and hard about it.
As hard as Moneypenny with the VR set?
Yep.
Are you at least convinced it's not the worst?
No.
Okay. Jeremy? No, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just trying to think of, like... Because, like, A View to a Kill is
I think Octopussy for me is just so terrible. See,
like, for me, Thunderball is bad because it's so boring. At least stuff happens here. But the problem is, this one is so aware. Like, if it were a comedy, like, if it were Roger Moore, it'd be at least enjoyable. Like, that's why A View to a Kill is a bit above it for me, because it's tongue-in-cheek. Bond here seems to be in a different movie than everyone around him. And it's like, we've all made a joke where someone else made a tag to that joke that's not necessary or funny. And every time Bond has a funny line, everyone else is like, wah, 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 wah. And you're just like, why did four people think they can make a better innuendo than Bond? The only line that Bond gets off on his own is when he's by himself, when he says, like, saved by the bell, and there's no one else around. And he's just...
It's almost like a dad who has that final moment to make a pun and no one's around to hear it and groan at him.
Yes. Like, I mean, at 75 years old or whatever Pierce is, that's essentially what he is at this point.
I mean, this one's definitely bad. I'd have to go and look back and see if I really do think this is my worst.
I mean, for me, it's up there with something like You Only Live Twice, where he's an Asian face half the... You know, or
looking back, that was really bad.
Man with the Golden Gun was pretty terrible.
I think there's some really fun parts of Man with the
Golden Gun.
I like Man with the Golden Gun a lot, actually. I mean, but that's just it. Like, some things I think are by the viewer, you know, because I kind of like that he's one-on-one with someone in Man with the Golden Gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here is just that.
Well, and it has a coherent plot. I mean,
there's two acts very distinct in that movie, but here it's kind of like, I mean, nothing says this is the 20th movie of a series we really want to remind you of than this movie, because it's all the things people said bad about Spectre, but worse, because it's literally fan service for people who don't care.
Spectre wasn't bad, it was just boring as shit.
And long.
Yeah.
And we'll get there when we get there, but like, I mean, that's the other thing about Spectre. It's half an hour longer than this one, easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this one is a touch over 2 hours.
I liked Spectre. I thought there was some very good parts.
I enjoyed it too, but it...
And that was actually one of my favorite cold opens out of...
We did that one live for the podcast?
I don't remember.
We just did it live together.
I think we just watched it. I love that cold open in that movie.
Yeah. And now we're in limbo for the next movie because Sam Mendes apparently needs 12 more years to do another American Beauty sequel.
Oh, boy.
So tune in next time where Bond will return in a blonder, more Aryan format, in a very handsome Rip Daniel Craig, in Casino Royale.
Mission Briefing and Myopia Defender Childhood are produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It's hosted and edited by Nick Hoffman. Our graphic designer is Scott Miller. The theme song is sampled from Monty Norman's James Bond theme. Questions and comments? Please visit myopiapodcast.com/missionbriefing or contact us through myopiamissionbriefing@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @missionbriefing and @myopiapodcast and find us on Facebook, Stitcher, and iTunes. And while you're on iTunes, please rate and review our podcast. Want to help us out? Go to myopiapodcast.com/Amazon and purchase stuff like normal. Myopia and Mission Briefing get a piece of the action. Another day. Sigmund Freud.
Analyze this. James Bond will return in Casino Royale.